Hi, Mike. Can you hear me?
Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Really nice to meet you. Thanks for joining me.
No problem. Let me shuffle some stuff around. Actually, I'm going to get my low-tech microphone stand.
I wouldn't worry too much.
Plastic box.
You want to see my setup?
Actually, I need a bigger plastic box. Right, here we go. You'll be able to hear me a bit better. Otherwise, I'm quite a long way away from the mic.
Awesome.
Cool.
So, yeah, well, let's just kick it off just dive straight into it. But, thanks, Mike, for joining me, obviously.
Yep.
And, sort of really excited to have you on the podcast and, sort of share your sort of journey, your story and all the rest of it. For the listeners out there, Mike Maynard, you're co-founder of Napier, digital marketing agency.
So I'm actually not a founder.
My mistake.
I actually bought the agency.
Even better.
So,
so the agency's been around for a long time. I understand it's like 19 years or something like that. So,
I bought it 19 years ago. The agency's been around for probably nearly 40 years now. 40 years next year, I think. So,
wow. So this is a well-established business that's been through all of those sort of huge changes with marketing and all of the rest of it. So this is going to be quite interesting. So obviously we're talking about startup chats and it'd be fascinating to sort of learn maybe a bit about the background before you got involved and maybe a bit about your backgrounds and then how then you came along and you know, where you took it really. That'd be really interesting.
I can tell you the secret story about why it's called Napier as well.
Let's do it.
It's a good one.
Yeah, no, definitely. Let's hear all about it. What's the story behind the name?
So Napier was originally founded by two people who were having an affair at the time. And so they decided...
So they're working together.
They weren't working together, so they decided they needed an excuse to spend more time together. So what they did was they formed an agency. And as it happened, one of them had a flat in Napier Mews in London. So they were trying to work out what to call the agency. And they sat down together and they said, Napier Mews London. That sounds like a good address. And obviously, this is back in the 80s when people cared about postal addresses. So therefore, it's called Napier.
Wow. So for those of you looking to start your own business, just go and have an affair, and that's a good enough reason to start a business.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd advise it. They did get married in the end. So it all ended happily ever after, I guess. But yes.
Amazing. Wow. So it was actually an excuse to spend time together.
Yeah, I mean, they're both working in technology marketing at the time, so it was an easy thing to do, but yes.
And probably
it was
something they were looking to do anyway, I'd guess.
Yeah, it was an interesting, very interesting approach, yeah.
Wow. So, are those original founders, are they still involved in the business, or are they sort of now sort of sold and retired and sold out to you and moved on?
Unfortunately, they passed away. They're both... Oh. It was a pretty horrible story, but the wife who was really the main force behind running it was supposed to work with us for 3 years after we acquired the company, and after just over 2 years, unfortunately, she died of cancer. Which was a pretty horrible experience for everyone. I mean, it was awful. We lost not only someone who was a part of the business and the history of the business, but also a friend. So it was a tough couple of first couple of years at Napier. So, I bought a technology agency 1 month before the .com crash. A free bit of business advice to everybody here.
So buying something in technology.
Yeah, buying something in technology in April 2001 was a bad idea because May was not a good month for technology. And to be honest, nor was June, July, or frankly, the rest of the year.
I remember vividly that sort of time period, because that's when I first moved to London after traveling around the world and spending a lot of time in Australia and what have you. And yeah, the whole sort of tech market was just booming. And then it all came crashing down. Didn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we had a situation. This is something startups will relate to. We were actually getting a new phone system installed, and it didn't work. And I remember at one point, one day, you know, people were stressing out about the fact that nobody could phone us. I said, look, the only people phoning us are cancelling their contracts or cutting their budgets. Let's keep another day of being able to keep the budget as it is. And then, you know, when they get through tomorrow, okay, it's going to be bad news. We know it's going to be bad news, but we've got another day of doing okay.
Yeah. So what's your background then in terms of, sort of what were you doing before you got involved with Napier?
So I actually started my career as an electronics design engineer, which is an interesting way to get into marketing. But I started off, I did some, system design, anything from, you know, radar systems to I worked for a company that designed mixing desks for recording studios. So mix of things. And I realized that I wasn't enjoying the work. That much, and it was really getting stuff into production that I hated. I didn't mind the creative designing stuff, but the getting things into production. So I looked around for a job where I could just talk about technology, really, rather than having to do all that hard work of getting something into manufacturing. I moved into technical support. So in electronic engineering, they have a role called a field applications engineer. It's basically an engineer that goes out and helps engineers. So you work for a supplier, so you become an expert on certain products and you go and help engineers who are trying to use them. And I did that for about, best part of 10 years, actually, working first at a distributor and then at a American semiconductor company. And I really, really enjoyed that role. It was really good. But it got to the point where I realized that the route to promotion in any American semiconductor company was to go to the States. And I decided I didn't want to move to the States, and I had an opportunity to move into marketing. So I thought, let's give it a go. You know, it's quite interesting. Yeah. I've done a few press briefings. Let's try moving into marketing. And you can tell that my career has been totally unplanned. absolutely no planning at all in it.
You know what? I think a lot of people will have experienced a similar sort of path. I think the key is to be an open throughout your career, unless you're very specific. You know, I always remember, you know, my mum, she was just wanted to be a dental hygienist and in sort of the medical profession since year dot. So for her and a lot of people who know what they want to do, that's easy. But I think there's so many people out there who don't. And I think the key is just being open to opportunities and what's of interest to you, because you don't often know when you're starting out what's going to float your boat and what's not going to float your boat. So I think testing and trying lots of things is really, really good and important.
Yeah, absolutely. So I ended up, my company sent me on a training course in Belgium, which was great. We had a week sort of management development course. And at the end of the week, you know, you all go out, you have a meal, you have a few glasses of wine, and someone said, you should run your own company, Mike. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Why are you saying that? Are you saying you'd never want to be my boss? And they said, actually, I'd never want to be your boss, but you should definitely run your own company. You seem like the sort of person who'd enjoy it. And about 3 months after that, the owners of the agency I was using, which was Napier, decided they wanted to sell. So they started this process of selling the agency. And so I bought it.
Amazing.
Thinking, how hard can it be? Yeah. The answer was, it was really hard, by the way. It's never as easy as you think it is. But purely serendipity, pure luck that the opportunity came up. And probably luck it came up after somebody had sort of planted that seed in my head as well.
Mm. So you were working with Napier, did you say?
Yeah, they were my agency as a European marketing manager. Yeah.
Fantastic. So you had that close relationship. And yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how things can happen and just, you know, the opportunities are sometimes right in front of you and you've got to actually go and grab it and make it happen. I mean, who knows what would have happened? You know, it's like sliding doors. If you hadn't made that decision, or if that person hadn't had that conversation with you, or you hadn't gone to dinner with that person, you know, it's crazy, isn't it?
You've just got to make the decision and then hope you've made the right one. I mean, there's no point looking back on it as to whether it was the right one, whether I should have bought another agency, you know, whether I should have gone into agency world. All of those things, I think you've just got to pick your opportunities. And you know, I have picked a few careers on fairly random, you know, fairly random ideas. But yeah, I agree. Take the opportunity and don't worry about it. Just make it work.
Definitely, definitely. And so it's interesting because with the podcast, you know, we are talking about the startup journey. At the moment, I'm sort of talking about that sort of pre-launch phase for early start founders. And we'll be evolving into other sort of areas of topics for that sort of startup journey a little bit further along as the podcast progresses. But when you took it over, there wasn't that whole, okay, right now we've got to launch something. You know, you would have taken it over and there would have been clients work in the pipeline, I'm guessing. And, you know, how did you sort of, I guess, sort of put your own stamp on it and take it in a direction that you wanted to take?
So that's a really interesting question. And I think, you know, people always think grass is greener on the other side. When I acquired the agency, there was lots of things that made me think, oh, I wish I was just starting this from scratch. It'd be so much easier. Because you've got all the things that have been done in the past, all that history that you've got to try and overcome. So I think when you do it, there's a couple of approaches. You know, you need to do some things that are symbolic, that mean something, but don't necessarily change the world. So, you know, one of the things that was clear in 2001, even with the dot-com crash, was people were moving more online. You know, and the idea of postal mailers being the primary way to reach people was clearly out of date. So moving services was very important, and changing the focus on how we promoted different services was really key. So it's lots of little things like that. I mean, I think, you know, we've subsequently acquired two companies, and I think every time I acquire a company, I think I'm not strong enough at putting my stamp on it. You know, I've talked to an American client actually, who in a very American way said, you know, there's only one way to do an acquisition, and that's to crush the souls of everybody you acquire and then build them back up again. And you know, he was obviously in a way making a joke, but there is a problem. I think whenever you've got this reset, you really do have to get people to step back. Otherwise, they're going to keep going with momentum in the same direction. I think with startups, they're less likely to see that in terms of acquisitions. They're much more likely to see that in terms of trying to do a pivot. And people talk about pivots and they make it sound like it's dead easy. It's really hard. It's really hard. And pivoting, you know, physically, if you want to pivot your body, it's easy if you're not moving. But if you've got momentum, to try and pivot is really difficult. And I think it's being able to, you know, pull back on that momentum and then inject some new momentum in a different direction. I mean, that's really the challenge. And that applies to all business.
Do you think that's from an operational perspective or from sort of managing client expectation perspective, or maybe a mixture of everything?
It is everything. I think, you know, when you've got a business running, and it doesn't really matter whether it's run for 40 years or whether it's run for, you know, two, that there's this inherent direction you're going in. And to change direction is really hard. Mm-hmm. And as smaller companies, you know, as startups and smaller businesses, honestly, we've got so much of an advantage over big companies because it's almost impossible to change the direction of a big company. Mm-hmm. But smaller companies, it's easy, but it's still hard work. And it does come down to everything. Everything within the business will be hopefully organized around achieving, you know, one particular direction, ultimately one goal. And then you want to change it and shoot at another target. You know, that means shifting everything, not just going and finding new customers. I mean, if you do that, you'll actually find it's a really ineffective way to change strategy.
And What sort of experiences specifically around your business did you sort of find that you had to sort of maybe do that strategic sort of realignment? Was that from the start when you took it over, or is it just you've had to pivot slightly here, you know, throughout that journey for the last 20 years? And how has that been for you?
So I think when I took the company over, obviously that we needed to change direction, and we needed to say, look, we're no longer going to ignore technology. We're going to focus. And I think this is quite common with a lot of agencies. They kind of tend to keep doing stuff and hope it keeps going. And as the owner gets towards retirement, you know, they're not looking to do new things. Yeah. So we had to move more into technology, but, you know, we were expecting kind of a curve in terms of the way marketing changed. And the reality is we've probably had a hairpin bend that has massively changed how marketing's done. And even recently, I mean, you know, if we look at what's happened with COVID, that's fascinating for marketing because it's created these enormous problems for salespeople. Salespeople can't go and visit their customers now. And we work only with business to business. So it tends to be a lot of personal selling. And that's, you know, that is twice as hard. These guys are having to work twice as hard to achieve what they used to be able to do. And they can't walk through a business and say hello to people they know, or, you know, check in and see what's being developed or pick up new opportunities. It's all individual Zoom calls. It's really painful. So we've seen again, you know, just this year, a huge switch towards marketing, but a switch towards certain types of digital marketing. So, you know, email is still a great way to reach people. And actually email has come back really, really strongly. We've seen that change versus, say, getting PR coverage where, you know, people aren't getting, for example, print magazines, you know, and a lot of industries still rely on print magazines. But if they're going to the business and somebody's working from home, they're just not seeing it. So, again, we've seen a big turnaround, a big focus on people spending money on digital. We're doing a lot more on pay-per-click advertising, which a lot of our clients didn't spend much on before. And they're now moving a lot of budget to programmatic. It's a huge change. And I think, you know, marketing's probably changed almost as much as any industry. Maybe the poor publishers we work with have had the worst of it, but, you know, it's changed dramatically. And I think it's going to keep changing. And that's what makes it interesting.
No, I can agree more. Do you, so looking over the last 20 years of your career, would you say, where I mean, obviously you mentioned the now as quite a critical sort of phase in the change of work practices and the way as marketers we're having to help our clients. What were there other points throughout that last 20 years that were other, you know, significant, right? That was quite a big milestone. Would it, for example, I don't know, 2008, 2009, whatever, Facebook, was that quite pivotal or was it something else?
So that's really interesting. Facebook doesn't really move the needle for our clients. And if I'm to be honest, I think some of them could do a bit more on Facebook than they do. But social in general has changed. However, if we look at where social has become influential in, you know, what I'll call the professional B2B markets, you know, where people are selling very high value products over long periods of time to lots of people, it's really LinkedIn where people want to go to engage with that in-depth, you know, complex content. And all our products we sell are technical, we sell to engineers. So, you know, our specialization is working with engineers and they want lots of detail. You don't want to do that on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. And to be honest, you know, LinkedIn, we've not seen LinkedIn as a social network really have a lot of impact until the last few years. And people were on LinkedIn and it was where their CV lived. And maybe they're involved in a group, but they weren't really doing much. Now the LinkedIn newsfeed actually is the first thing a lot of people look at in the morning. And it's completely changed. But it, you know, there was a point where we were almost thinking, look, come on, social media's got to impact our clients, you know, in a big way at some point. And it just wasn't happening. And now LinkedIn has really done that and come to the fore. And you know, we'll still run Twitter campaigns and you know, a little bit on Instagram, a little bit on Facebook, but certainly where the focus is for our clients on social, it's LinkedIn by far. I mean, almost all the budget goes there, pretty much.
That's interesting. And has that been like an educational hurdle that you've had to sort of overcome with your clients to sort of steer them in the right direction, or have they been quite open to it, or have they even sort of approached you about it?
So I think the interesting thing is that it varies between clients. Some clients tried social early on and they got burned. It didn't work. If people go to Facebook, they're probably going to Facebook to waste time. And you know, one of my clients had this great quote. They said, you know, if people go to Facebook, they're going there to waste time. You should respect that and help them waste time. You shouldn't try and, you know, sell them products or be serious or anything like that. And I think, you know, people tried to be serious and tried to have, you know, their corporate website persona on Facebook, and it just fell flat. So those clients were perhaps a little more reluctant to buy into LinkedIn, and maybe took a little longer to buy in because they tried social before and it failed. I think where clients hadn't tried so much social, they were much more enthusiastic. Because they were looking for something they felt was a fit, and LinkedIn suddenly became this great fit and very, very powerful. So it varied across clients as to how they approached it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's very interesting, isn't it, how different industries sort of view different things. I mean, ultimately, you've got to go where your audience is, and there are just billions of people using all these different social platforms, and it's figuring out where the best place is for you. But ultimately, every business, you know, has a digital presence, don't they? So they need to be on point if they are going to be there, and not, you know, be weak in a particular area if they choose to be on that platform. I think that's the key, where potentially if they are weak, it will be, you know, damaging to their brand.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You need to go where your audience is, but you also need to go where your audience is and when they're ready to engage. And I think this is where, you know, the early days of Facebook didn't work for a lot of B2B technology companies. Was people were on Facebook to talk to their gran. They weren't on Facebook or talk to their friends, or, you know, they weren't on Facebook to do work. And that switch between having fun and work was too big a jump. Whereas on LinkedIn, you know, yeah, they're not technically working quite often. They're just looking to see what's happening and see the news. And, you know, industry news is a key part of LinkedIn. So it's not work as such, but that jump to actually doing work and evaluating products or suppliers is much smaller. It's much easier for people to make psychologically. So I think, you know, definitely you can reach certain companies, certain audiences on Facebook, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right place. It's mm-hmm. got to be right place and also right time in terms of the mindset of the audience.
So talking about these B2B businesses and the current challenges they're facing in their sort of, I guess, their sales strategy, where, you know, by the sounds of it, a lot of them are the typical sort of salespeople on the road making relationships and getting out there. And you're mentioning about how it's begin sort of particularly challenging. Do you see these sort of change of work practices continuing post the COVID crisis, or do you see people sort of reverting back to the norm?
Wow, that's a great question. That's a really interesting question, Ben. I think I'm more towards the fact that people will be back in offices in general. I think remote working will increase for sure, but I don't think we'll all be working remotely in the future. And the reason is that there's a lot of jobs that actually aren't very effective when you work remotely. You know, even being in an agency, you know, when you're looking to work together with a team of people to support an account, maybe come up with some campaign ideas, even on a Zoom call, it's not that good. Mm. It doesn't work as well as being face to face. You know, training is harder remotely, and I think most companies believe that. You know, it's great that companies have created training content that people can view on demand. I think that's been a huge improvement. But that kind of, you know, having someone sit with you and work through a problem or explain something is it's just less effective remotely. So I think there will be a move back to offices. The honest answer is I don't know quite what that will look like. So whether we'll all be in the office 3 days a week, whether we'll be in the office 5 days a week, whether you know, people will come and go as and when, or it could be any of those things, and probably will vary potentially by industry and also by company.
No, definitely. I think we're also seeing a trend of people, because of that very reason, you know, that they are sort of positioning themselves to not have to travel into London, you know, on the daily commute like they have done. And, you know, actually, well, why can't I live in Somerset or Devon or Cornwall and commute, you know, a couple of times a month? So I think that's interesting in this in many regards and has lots of different impacts on multiple levels. It's a funny one, isn't it? I definitely feel it's this whole situation has accelerated our technological sort of development and using tools and realigning our businesses and our brands. It's interesting. I think, you know, a lot of businesses that we've seen are having to sort of realign the whole sort of strategy, you know, when they're particularly focused on, you know, sort of using a particular, I guess, reseller, and then suddenly that, you know, that person is unable to open, then they're going, okay, well, hang on a second, I need to actually reach to the consumer directly and realign my brand and not just be a wholesaler, for example. So I think that's very interesting. With your customers, that are you finding that it is that those sort of challenges didn't crop up, that whole sort of pivoting into a different sort of market wasn't a problem for your market?
So a lot of our customers are big enterprises, so they're not going to move into a new market. But I think there's been an unbelievable number of changes in the way they approach their markets. And it's this problem that sales, when you're not face-to-face, is very hard work. And I think we've seen, you know, when you look at selling a product, you know, marketing is clearly top of the funnel, sales is bottom of the funnel, and there's kind of a blurry line in between. And definitely in you know, the last year, the share that's been marketing has been much bigger. Interestingly, we've seen quite a lot of clients where the attitude of salespeople has changed. So salespeople, certainly for our clients, tended to be account managers. They tended to have, you know, 4 or 5 very big accounts, and they'd sell to them and they'd sell the same stuff. And it was all about managing. It wasn't really about selling. And the way that they sold was they had, you know, great relationships with the people they're working with. And then if somebody else was interested, you know, in a solution that they could provide, they then got referred in, and it was very much word of mouth. Now that's definitely reduced with COVID, with people working remotely. And so we've seen a lot of salespeople much more enthusiastic to get leads and much more proactive in the lead follow-up. And that's the classic with any sales team, is they always want leads, and then, you know, the perception is they don't follow them up. I mean, we've seen that change quite dramatically. And that can be both channel partners. So if you had a reseller and they're able to still operate, then they're being much more proactive and they're pushing the supplier, but also people selling direct, and the salespeople are much more willing to work direct rather than just leave the reseller to do it. So it's definitely changed the approach. And I think it's been fantastic, because rather than being, you know, marketing and sales fighting against each other, which is traditionally always what's happened. I mean, you know, as someone who's in marketing, I know that every single lead clearly is impacted by my marketing materials. But I also know that most salespeople think because they got the order, it was all down to them. And that's the, you know, the normal amusing way that you look at this battle between sales and marketing. But now with COVID, it's much more collaborative.
That's interesting, isn't it? And I was going to say, is that approach now having to be sort of almost more closely merged between the sales and marketing, and working together closer and think about the comms that the salesperson would have usually have done, but how they, if they can't do it the normal way, how those comms could be sort of distributed effectively?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, salespeople I mean, they've always seen the value of marketing. But I think they've been much more engaged and much more open about working with the marketing teams, because they know they need marketing. And you know, I think that's really helped, because frankly, sometimes marketing teams do the wrong thing, and it's down to poor communication with sales. So you might, with the very best of intentions, run a campaign targeting a particular product, particular audience, and it may be the case that audience just doesn't buy the product for whatever reason. They're not the right job role, but you don't understand it because the sales team hasn't explained it to you. Now that the sales team are being much more involved, I see much better marketing campaigns being driven, because you're getting the benefit of that input from the people who really, you know, understand day to day the customer. And also the sales team are much more bought in and committed to making it work as well. So it's good on both sides.
Definitely. So what does that entail from a practical perspective from, you know, an agency who's supporting a company with, you know, their own sales team? Does that, for example, would that company have their own internal marketing team, which you are also supporting? And does that role then require you to practically, you know, touch those salespeople regularly to build those campaigns, to get them on, you know, onboarded? And what does that look like?
I mean, you're absolutely right. Most of our clients have a marketing team. Some have a marketing team of hundreds of people. And they also have big sales teams as well. And we are speaking directly to salespeople. I mean, as an agency, it's something we've always tried to do. And I'd love to say it's down to us being much better at it now that we're talking to salespeople more. I don't necessarily think that's true. I think the environment has meant it's much easier to talk to salespeople, but it's been great. You know, and I think
happen before?
It did happen before, for sure. So different clients had different levels, but it's definitely stepped up. Whatever we were doing before this year, I think the engagement with salespeople has increased pretty much across the board. And to me, that's great. I mean, we're getting so much more information and that lets us build better campaigns. It's really that simple.
It's really interesting, isn't it? How you think, well, why on earth wasn't that happening before?
Yeah, it wasn't happening before. And to be fair, you know, there's lots of reasons. If you're a sales guy on the road, you're on the road. I mean, communications then is that much more difficult back to your marketing team that's in the office. I think the salespeople had sources of leads from basically through word of mouth, through the people that they had strong relationships with in companies. And that becomes more difficult when you're not spending so much time face-to-face with them. I think it's a whole range of different factors. And obviously once salespeople are back out on the road, it is going to make it harder to talk to them and to reach them. But hopefully moving forward, we're going to be okay. And we're going to keep this level of interaction. That's my wish anyway.
Well, that would seem to make sense, because then they'd benefit from, you know, this new, I guess, route to market plus what they were existing, you know, already doing before. So ultimately that can only help a business, I guess. Wow. Fascinating. And so what's the future, you know, for you guys, for your business? Where do you see it, you know, over the next sort of 20, 40, 40 years? Any more affairs or anything like that? I don't know.
No affairs planned, I'd have to say that. I'm far too busy for that. I don't know how anyone ran a business and did that. But I think it's the future's really interesting. So we've actually grown quite a lot. Last year, we bought an agency that was roughly the same size as us, which was hugely complex to do and merge in, and that only recently, so just over 18 months it took us to really get that acquisition done. It really seems to have fired now, and it's made a huge difference to what we can do, what we can offer. And it's all about offering more services and offering services in more depth, and that ultimately needs people. If you're an agency of three people, you can't be experts on everything. But it, you know, we're an agency of 35, 36 people, and we can have experts in different areas. So, you know, we're seeing, for example, organic social media growing very, very fast in our business. And it's interesting that paid social on LinkedIn for us grew much earlier than the organic social, but that's growing really fast. And we're putting some investment in there in terms of both tools and also people. And I think, you know, technology will just keep driving us forward in marketing. The interesting challenge, and this is the thing that marketers all understand and don't like to admit, is that there's clearly a battle going on between governments, particularly in Europe, and marketing technology companies, with the marketing technology companies trying to extract every bit of data they can and governments trying to restrict how it's being used. And to me, that's an interesting scenario that's going to play out over the next few years. And I think it presents a lot of opportunities because, you know, in particular, a lot of our work is generating content. And without doubt, great content is going to win because you're not going to be able to target down to individuals all the time. I mean, that's quite clear with GDPR. It's just not going to happen. And even America's now following. I mean, California's now got some fairly strict privacy laws in place. So to me, that's very interesting. And that's going to change marketing again quite a lot in terms of how people do it and what is expected by the audience and what's acceptable and what's frankly creepy.
So that's interesting. So you think it'd be a move away from, you know, the analytical drilling down on audience side per se and being super technical to more creativity, more branding, more thinking about the customer, quality of content and those sort of things?
So I think analytical marketing is in general massively overdone. And, you know, I'll see people who are looking at click-through rates and they'll go, well, this has got a fractionally higher click-through rate than the other one. So this ad's got to be better. And you say, well, it could be randomness. I mean, do you know about statistics? Because there's all this analysis you can do. And I can tell you that statistically it's likely to be randomness. But even if it's not, is a higher click-through rate better or is it worse? Because I don't know any businesses other than, you know, people like Facebook who run their business based on generating clicks. Most people want to sell something and they want, you know, to do that by perhaps getting a name, a registration, then getting a sales meeting, you know, having a discussion, presenting a proposal, and then selling a product. And to
be
honest,
what's your business goal?
Yeah. You know, if you look at Napier, I mean, Napier is a great example. We could probably take on two new clients a month, and give them really good service and all the rest of it. But more than two clients, we really don't have the resources to do that. You know, I've got thousands of people a month coming to my website. I only care about two. So, you know, if I'm running, you know, looking at my Google ads or looking at the LinkedIn promotions we run or anything like that, you know, increasing the click-through rate, going from, you know, say 500 clicks from LinkedIn to 520, that's irrelevant. I mean, I just want the two that work. And it is a numbers game, but going up to 520 could just be a lot more clicks that are never going to be useful. So I think it's people have got to really understand their business as a whole. And I think that will happen more and more. People will understand that. There's a lot of, you know, discussion. Everybody's building customer journeys at the moment. That's one of the in things in marketing. And I think that's going to be a big driver going forward, is understanding how your customer goes from never having heard of you all the way through to actually buying your product or your service. And that's super important. If people can understand that and then build their marketing around the customer, not around their preconceptions of what marketing should be, that's the right thing to do.
No, definitely. No, absolutely. On that note, I think we'll wrap it up. But Mike, thank you so much for sharing those fantastic insights. And I couldn't agree more. I think too many businesses focus internally on themselves and what should they think the procedures should be, rather than thinking about that customer journey, what, you know, that perfect, so I guess, you know, way that they first interact with you to then eventually buying. And I couldn't agree more. Mike, before we go though, could you just maybe share, obviously you've been around the, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but we've been around the block a bit with your, you know, been in business for, you know, 20 plus years, which is phenomenal and fantastic. Could you maybe share with maybe some of the other younger audiences who are maybe looking to start their own business or on that journey, some little tidbits or words of wisdom?
So my favorite quote, which is a quote from a guy called Jason Calacanis, is ideas are easy, execution is difficult. And I think if you look at most things to do with starting your own business, you think it's all about the idea at the start. It's not. It's about how you execute it. And to me, that really is the challenge. You know, it's dead easy to come up with ideas for businesses that could be great. It's really hard to make those businesses great. And I think really focusing on execution is key. That's my view. And persistence is also an important part of that. And one of the things, you know, I have seen is that you hear companies talking about pivots. Now, pivots is a great thing for a startup to do. Actually, pivots are a terrible thing for a startup to do because it means you're going in the wrong direction. You need to try and start off and fire in the right direction and then make minor course corrections. If you're doing, you know, pivot after pivot, you're not actually achieving anything. You're just running around burning money. And I think, yeah, you've got to think about, you know, having a bit of focus, having a bit of persistence, and having a bit of belief in the idea and really working through it. The problem is I guarantee as soon as you start your new business, you know, you'll sit down first day of running the new business, and what will come into your mind is almost certainly not what you should be doing or how you can make that business great, but you'll suddenly have all these other ideas of all these different things you could have done, and maybe I should have done a business like that. It's inevitable, you know, and you've got to shut them out, and you've got to say, this is what I'm trying to do, stick to the mission, make it happen. If you do get evidence that you've screwed up, it's the wrong direction, then yeah, for sure, pivot, but don't think that's a good thing.
No, definitely. I think there's that natural trait for a lot of young entrepreneurs, or any entrepreneur, to be fair, of looking for that next new shiny thing and chasing that, and then chasing the next new shiny thing and never actually executing. But no, thank you, Mike, for sharing that. That's been phenomenal, and I'm sure our audience will gain a huge amount from those insights. But listen, Mike, thank you so much for joining me, and it's been a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me on the show, Ben. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
Brilliant, Mike. Thank you. I'll edit it from there. But I just want to say, you know, huge personal thank you. It's been brilliant and really nice to meet you.
Great. No, thank you. I felt like the first bit of it was not great from my point of view. It seemed to take me a time to get into it, but it was great. It was a really interesting discussion in the end. I really enjoyed it.
No, great. No, I thought you were brilliant throughout. So don't worry. It's we're always all hypercritical of ourselves, I know. So no, it's really good and really great to meet you. You know, when all this COVID thing sort of ends, when I'm next, where do you?
We're in Chichester, South Coast, so.
Yeah, not many miles away. So we're in Devon, so.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah,
if I'm ever around, I'll give you a shout and get, you know, grab a coffee or a beer or something.
That'd be brilliant, yeah, that'd be great. Do you know when this will be going out, the podcast?
A little while. I've got a few in the pipeline that I need to get out. I've been focusing. I had a few technical problems a few weeks back, and I sort of put pause on a few of the podcasts and getting those technical problems ironed out. We seem to be on top of those, and so we've got a bit of a backlog. So we're just going to be probably publishing one or two a week moving forward. I'll give you a heads up when we know. Because obviously it'd be nice, you know, if you want to, you know, share it, copy it or whatever.
Definitely. Platforms. That's why we love doing this, is because, you know, being able to share it is great. I've now revealed my
content,
complete,
isn't it?
My complete amateurism by leaving the phone in the room. So
to be fair, I've got mine. I'm just lucky to go off. So that's absolutely fine.
No, that'd be brilliant. So let us know when it happens and when it goes out, and we'll definitely share it. I mean, I would say we're not the fastest in terms of turning around the promotion, but we definitely like to do it. So
no, yeah. I mean, in all honesty, I'm doing this for two reasons. Ultimately, one is it's a great way to meet new people in our industry and who maybe have similar mindsets and all the rest of it, learn from them, and it's almost as part of my own pre-launch, talking about that startup journey.
Oh wow, what are you gonna do? What's your business?
So we've got a marketing agency, ourselves, Bar Media, we're sort of, you know, quite young, but we're growing, and we're more into the sort of brands side of the business, although I have heard from a fellow marketer who's very, very good friends of mine, he said you want to get into B2B because it's much more profitable and the margins are much better, the expectations aren't as, you know, sky high and all the rest of it. So that's quite interesting.
Yes and no, I think, is the answer. It depends on the clients. You get good clients and bad clients, I think. We get clients who, you know, we'll talk to them and say, what do you want? We'll say, well, we want to be on the front page of the Financial Times, and you say, well, you're not a quoted company. So, you know, there's pretty much only one way you're going to get on the front page of the Financial Times, and that's sleeping with Jeff Bezos. So, you know, they don't tend to like that. But yeah, no, I think B2B is more stable. That is the big difference. Consumer tends to be shorter projects. B2B tends to be much longer relationships. So that is a massive difference. That's what I like about B2B.
That's interesting. But yeah, on the side, I'm sort of developing like a property platform. It's going to be interesting. It's been in the pipeline for a long time. We're slowly getting there. So there's definitely one that's been bootstrapped. Yeah, we'll see. I don't want to say too much about it because it's all very much. It's one of those things I don't want to talk too much about until I'd actually deliver. Like you were exactly saying, it's all about the delivery. And I think you can talk too much about things, and well, that's all well and good, but actually, let's get it out there and let's focus on it. So this is a very sort of initial, subtle sort of pre-launch. Getting a little bit of interest around Hub Into, which is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you go on the socials, you can still get little snippets of, you know, just get an idea. Oh, so, you know, it gives you an idea of what it's about without going into too much detail. So yeah, we're hoping to. Oh, realistically, I'd say, yeah, sort of end of the first quarter next year.
Wow. Okay. So not far away.
No, not at all. But it's definitely, you know, talking about persistence, that, you know, I've been doing this probably for the last 5 years or so, and had those ups and downs of getting something out the door. But it's quite ambitious, so that's probably part of the challenge.
Yeah, that's always difficult, particularly if it's bootstrapped, because you always want to make it like perfect. There's nobody saying, I don't care, just ship it. But yeah.
And we're trying to make the product, you know, phenomenal. So it does, it sort of does a bit of product marketing for us. So people want to talk about it and share it and things like that. So we're trying to bring in the marketing into the product itself. Interesting. But
Good luck.
I'm sure you'll hear more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, no, definitely. But yeah, Mike, I better let you crack on, because I'm sure you've got lots of other things to be dealt with.
No problem. Thanks very much, Ben. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, nice to meet you, Mike. You take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Cheers.